Welcome to KHAM Radio, the show that challenges what you think you know. The world, if you believe media and governments, is filled with terrorists and pandemics, but there's a better world out there, and it's called reality. Hi, I'm Kay, and you're listening to this show thanks to Ab at Fakeologist.com. The benefit of being a fakeologist is we don't have to worry about terrorists or pandemics, as these are just scare campaigns. Let's talk about it. The TeamSpeak program that you will need to download to chat with me can be found at audiochat.fakeologist.com. I'm on a journey to figure this all out. I thought that my journey to find the truth was about facts and data. Turns out it's about working with other people. Information and collaboration is a very powerful tool, and people are the key. Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is KHAM Radio. It's December 11th, 2014, and it is 4:15, and that is West Coast time, 4:15 on the West Coast. I thought I would start out today by going over some articles, posts that Ab has made at fakeologist.com, and some comments, just talk of that about a little bit. I don't want to talk about the news. It's just so depressing. I've been listening to it. Just going to shut the door before I say I've been listening to it with my husband. And it's just depressing the heck out of me. It's so negative and so, I don't know, even listening to No Agenda. Wow. They're forcing me to watch the news. I don't want to watch the news because it's negative, but when I listen to No Agenda, because they, I guess that's what they do. They take the news, they cut it down into manageable pieces, but still making me listen to it. So I might rethink listening to No Agenda with Adam Curry and John C. Dvorak. The more I listen to them, the more it feels like they are controlled opposition. Once in a while, Adam will go, John, no, don't. Not that. So it's like, what are you telling him not to say? What's going on here, Mr. Adam Curry? Why would you tell John not to say something? Anyway, it's just weird. So let's go to fakeologist.com. See what is up fresh out of the oven. First post is fake enhanced interrogation techniques. I saw this and it was disturbing, but it's fake. Let's read it. It's a video about torture that Rolo had initially posted in the chat. Let's go ahead and read that. Fake enhanced interrogation techniques. Rolo posts a video that reminded me of how disturbed I was years ago when I saw the 60 Minutes piece of the ex-CIA head of torture. Soon after, I became a fakeologist. I have modified my horrified views of this animal and think there's a good chance he's just another in a long list of fear-mongering actors used to scare the hell out of the enemy and, of course, the average American citizen. I'm going to break in right here, because if you talk to any doctor of psychology, they will tell you, you can't get information from torture. It simply doesn't happen, because they're going to tell you anything to stop the torture. They're going to tell you what you want to know, not what they know. Like a lot of things, when we think something happened, we have a certain image of it in our brain, how it went down. But if I need knowledge from you about my perceived event, you might not even be thinking of the same event, even though it's the same. I guess my point to that is, even when you're asking for knowledge, a lot of times we're not sure what we're asking for because we don't know the whole truth. So, in a nutshell, torture doesn't work to get information. So why do we keep doing it? It's psychological. That's why. Pure and simple. End of story. Period. We have really good drugs too. If you really want to know what secrets people have, the CIA has in their possession, I'm told, some of the best drugs on the planet to make you feel good about yourself so that you'll say anything. So you see, you don't get information through torture. You get information the other way. So why do they torture? Let's continue reading. While I don't doubt there probably is some torture going on in some circles somewhere. I don't believe it's wholesale approved, just like I don't believe drones are mowing down wedding parties in Pakistan and Yemen. I think just the media story alone has enough of an effect, as is the case with all PSYOPs. Here's another story that says this new admission of torture may jeopardize the whole 9/11 masterminds trials. Could this be a simple exit strategy to let these sims go back into the digital ether? We got a 5-minute video here. Let's listen to the ex-CIA head of torture on 60 Minutes.
We caught a lot of people. We didn't catch the one we wanted.
But they did catch others, including Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, the man who planned 9/11. He was captured in Pakistan.
When Khalid Sheikh Mohammed ended up in the hands of CIA interrogators, what did he say?
I'll talk to you guys when you take me to New York and I can see my lawyer.
But the CIA had something else in mind. Khalid Sheikh Mohammed and others were swept up in the high-value detainee program. Secret prisons like this were set up, and several suspects were questioned under new so-called enhanced interrogation techniques, said to include sleep deprivation, extreme cold, and waterboarding, which causes a severe gag reflex as water is continuously poured over the face.
You know, the image that's been portrayed is we sat around the campfire and said, oh boy, now we go get to torture people. Well, we don't torture people. Let me say that again to you. We don't torture people. Okay?
Come on, so, George.
We don't torture people.
Khalid Sheikh Mohammed.
We don't torture people.
Waterboarding.
We do not. I don't talk about techniques and we don't torture people. Now, listen to me. I want you to listen to me. So the context is it's post 9/11. I've got reports of nuclear weapons in New York City, apartment buildings that are going to be blown up, planes that are going to fly into airports all over again, plot lines that I don't know. I don't know what's going on inside the United States, and I'm struggling to...
Did you hear that? He just said plot lines that I... Plot lines? Really? Is that what we're calling? Let's see if we can listen to some of that plot line thing again.
Over again. Plot lines that I don't know. I don't know what's going on inside...
Plot lines that I don't know. I think George Tenet, this is the guy who's talking right now, probably said something he shouldn't have said. And he didn't finish his sentence there about plot lines. He just moved on. I guess it is hard when you're managing a PSYOPs to know all the plot lines. We know 9/11 has so many plots. Oh my gosh. Let's just say a couple plot lines from 9/11. I'm going to write them down so I don't repeat. We have the gold. 9/11 was done because of the gold that was in a vault underneath the Twin Towers. And I think that was, this was from Richard Gage. He had found, he said he knew of a truck carrying gold stuck on one of the roadways that broke down, but he thinks several others got away. So that whatever gold was under the Twin Towers was looted, except that one truck. That's a plot line. There's a lot of them. I mean, Judy Wood said there were nukes. That's that separate plot line. Because George Tenet just talked about nukes, right? Well, we know that's what Judy Wood says. So that's another plot line. Nukes. Well, I guess we have the Sims, all the people who died. Because according to fakeologists, very few people died on 9/11. And they didn't die in the towers crashing down. They might have been murdered so that their deaths could have been blamed on 9/11, but they didn't die because the towers fell on them. Now, there could have been a worker, perhaps an explosives expert who might have gotten somehow crushed by the building the day they fell, but we don't know that. So we have all the dead people. That's a plot line. And each one of those dead people, they got their own thing. So yeah, you're right, George. There's a lot of damn plot lines around 9/11. Let's continue with George Tenet, the ex-CIA director, who's answering questions about torture on 60 Minutes.
Inside the United States, and I'm struggling to find out where the next disaster is going to occur. Everybody forgets one central context of what we live through. The palpable fear that we felt on the basis of the fact that there was so much we did not know.
Fear was palpable. Is that true, George? Fear was palpable. You could feel the fear. Let's look up palpable. I think it's like feel, but I don't know. Palpable. Let's just get that right down there. Able to be touched. There you go. You could touch the fear. It was so bad. Let's back up why we were able to touch the fear, George. All the information the public had on 9/11/2001 came from the news media. Pretty much, that's it. Unless you had a friend back east who phoned home or something to tell you how everything was going. On 9/11, all our information was from the television set and the radio and a little bit of the internet, not so much. So if the fear was palpable, it was coming out of the television set. It was coming out of the radio and it was coming from the internet because it wasn't coming from me. I didn't know what happened on 9/11 except for what I was told through the television set.
I know that this program has saved lives. I know we've disrupted plots.
But what you're essentially saying is some people need to be tortured.
No, I did not say.
So we said torture saves lives and it stopped plots. There we go. I got that written down. I want to forget that. Torture saved lives because it stopped plots. Well, because 9/11, how I think, and a lot of people are with me on this, that the towers fell due to conventional explosives. The Twin Towers had a minimum amount of tenants, so it was easy to get the few that were left out to plant those explosives. That wasn't a big deal. In fact, not all the floors of the Twin Towers had even been finished. To some accounts, less than a quarter of the floors had even been put in. That's why when the building fell, there wasn't a lot of garbage in the after images, if we can trust those images of the big piles, which I don't think we can. I don't think we can trust any image from the media surrounding 9/11. So basically, George is just lying here. You're just sitting there lying your face off, George. You're saying torture saves lives because it stopped plots. What damn plots? Because you made up 9/11, and I'm pretty sure you made up all these other plots you stopped by torture. My point here is there's so much lying going on television, thinking it's probably better not to watch it at all. Because every time you watch it, it messes with the new paradigms we're setting up in our head. I got to go back now. Wait a minute. George is lying. That's right. He's saying 9/11 happened when it didn't. Let's continue, shall we?
Say that. I did not say
You're telling me that the enhanced interrogation...
I did not say that. We do not torture... Listen to me.
Well, you call it in the book enhanced interrogation technique.
Well, that's what we call it.
That's a euphemism.
Well, I'm not having a semantic debate with you. I'm telling you what I believe.
Anybody ever die in the interrogation program?
No.
You're sure of that?
Yeah. In this program that you and I are talking about, no.
Have you ever seen any of these interrogations done?
No.
Didn't you feel like it was your responsibility to know what you were signing off on?
I'm not a voyeur. I understand what I was signing off on.
Lose any sleep over it?
Yeah, of course you do. Of course you lose sleep over it. You're on new territory, but that's not the point. What's this tension? So the tension is I've just lived through 3,000 people dying. This is not a clinical exercise. Maybe for you guys, it's a clinical exercise. Not for me.
Oh, wow. This is why it's hard to watch the news. Listening to this guy, and I know he's lying. 3,000 people died? Really? And that's why we torture? So if 3,000 people didn't die, then why do we torture? So what's going on there?
3,000 people died. Friends died. Now I'm going to sit back, and then everybody says, you idiots don't know how to connect the dots. You don't have imagination. You are unwilling to take risk to protect this country.
Let me ask the question this way. Why were enhanced interrogation techniques necessary?
Because these are people that will never, ever, ever tell you a thing.
We have to use enhanced interrogation techniques, which, by the way, they have not. We don't know what that is. Is that waterboarding? Is that stuffing a hot poker up someone's butt? I don't know. What is that? Who knows what that is? But it's just hard to listen to this guy lie to my face.
There are people who know who's responsible for the next terrorist attack? These are hardened people that would kill you and me 30 seconds after they got out of wherever they're being held and wouldn't blink an eyelash. You can sit there 5 years later and have this debate with me. All I'm asking you to do, walk a mile in my shoes when I'm dealing with these realities.
Tennant says,
this guy, he's so good. He's faking that all emotion like he's believing this. 3,000 people died. We got to torture people because 3,000 people died. We don't know how Osama bin Laden got over, got his people here, and we don't know how they communicated so we can stop that next time. But 3,000 people died, so let's torture people.
The interrogations uncovered networks and broke up plots in the U.S.
Is Al-Qaeda in the United States right now?
My operational presumption is that they infiltrated a second wave or a third wave into the United States at the time of...
All right, think about this while you're listening to this. We don't hear much from Al-Qaeda in the news. What we hear is ISIS. Now we hear about ISIS or ISIL or Islamic State. Wouldn't you imagine that Al-Qaeda would somehow be at odds with ISIS? I mean, they're in the same territory. I don't understand why that's not a problem. Shouldn't they're saying, from the reading I've done, that ISIS is an offshoot of Al-Qaeda. But still, you can have an offshoot that they leave because of differences and then you become enemies. So it seems to me ISIS and Al-Qaeda should be fighting each other over territory. It doesn't, if they're real, but we know they're not, so never mind.
9/11. Can I prove that to you? No. It's my operational intuition.
He told us in 2003, terrorists were in the U.S. prepared to attack the New York City subways when bin Laden's number two called them back.
By 2003, the intelligence tells you that Zawahiri has called off an attack against the New York City subway system in favor of something larger. What is that larger thing?
One clue, Tennant says, is that bin Laden has been trying to get his hands on nuclear material since 1993.
Are these people going to have a nuclear capability?
That's one of the other scare tactics that fakeologists generally don't believe in, nuclear weapons. For me personally, I'm not sure. I mean, I think there's radiation. I think we can prove that. I mean, you have x-rays. X-rays work. They look through your body. So I think there's radiation, but to make an atomic bomb is extremely difficult. I've talked about this before, but if you research it, basically an atomic bomb's one of the crucial components to an atomic bomb is styrofoam. Because you have an initial explosion, it's rather large, of C4 inside the nuclear warhead, but it's kept in there by the nose cone. So the nose cone is supposed to be of whatever, like, intercontinental ballistic missile. So the little, not the nose cone, but the area, there's a confined area where the explosion takes place. It melts the, what do you call that, styrofoam, turns it into a vapor kind of thing. And then somehow that vapor interacts with the radiation and the nuclear material and causes this big explosion. Once you look into it, it's so absolutely ridiculous. I don't think it's true. And if you look into anything, there's a whole nuke lies. There's a ton of websites out there that talk about how nuclear bombs are fake. But a great one is nukelies.org. Let me check that out just to make sure. Nuke lies. Well, there's a couple of them. One is www.big-lies.org/nukelies. There's a couple others. But if you just do nuclear bomb hoax, you're going to get a lot of really cool websites to look at. So now think of what he's saying. If 9/11 didn't happen, 3,000 people didn't die, and we don't have nuclear weapons, then this is all just a psychological operation.
This confers superpower status on a networked organization that is not a state. Is it going to happen? Look, I don't know, but I worry about it because I've seen enough to tell me that there's intent. And when there's intent, the question is, when does the capability show up? If
intent, where there's intent, there might be capability. Really? Because a lot of people I know would do a lot of things if they have the capability to do it, but they're not doing it now because they don't. So I don't think you can go on intent, and I don't think it's legal to to arrest someone on intent. It's not legal to go into someone's house, like the police, for example, and take someone out because they thought that person intended to do something. And what a perfect excuse also. Intent. You don't know intent unless you're inside my brain. You don't know intent unless I tell you intent. Regardless of the chatter or the communications that intelligence gathers, they still don't know intent. True intent. They don't know. So to kill people on intent, well, they can't. It's not legal. So those parts are faking it.
Al-Qaeda were to acquire nuclear capability, the thousands of weapons we have would be irrelevant.
In the midst of the Al-Qaeda threat, Tennant says he was astonished and mystified when the White House turned its aim to Iraq. When we come back, some of what we've always wanted to know about how this war got started.
Well, that's the end of that clip. We got a bunch of liars on that one. And to sum this up, by torturing the five men now being tried of the 9/11 Military Commission, the CIA may have jeopardized the U.S. government's ability to seek the death penalty and perhaps jeopardize the case entirely. Well, that's CIA. That's 60 Minutes take on the story. I think if we would have done nothing, we would still be in this. I mean, if the police had done nothing because the story is fake, if the Army had done nothing because the Twin Towers did not fall, we'd still be in the same place. Because what I've seen from the research, even though there's a PSYOP going on, there's all these little PSYOPs going on too. And it's so complicated. I don't know how we're supposed to figure all this crap out. I don't know. If you know, let me know. There's another article that on Fakeologist.com, Hoy reviews a 9/11 laden X-Files TV show. This proves my idea that the best Hollywood script writers are used for the military psyops. It may even be a condition of employment. Most everyone knows about the Lone Gunman pilot episode in which an airplane is hacked to prevent it from flying into the World Trade Center. But that series, creators, may have been inspired by an earlier episode of its parent show, The X-Files. Let's see now. This is Hoy writing from cluesforum.info. Hoy Ploy. He's a very excellent writer at Clues. He's very cogent with his thinking and clear with his writing. He does great articles. I'll continue. Perhaps the most paranormal aspect of this low-budget, semi-Canadian dark comedy called The Lone Gunman is mere fact that the FBI characters in it are genuinely warm people who care about the truth and that the American public a misguidedly attempt to serve it too. Still, this has to be one of the strangest episodes about the paranormally normal FBI agents, the X-Files, besides the most embarrassingly insipid episode about a scary spacewalk out of a NASA shuttle whose heavy-handed writing alone gives credence to the idea that NASA is an entirely fake organization propped up on hype and artificial drama, and which I cannot bring myself to critique. The episode I'm reviewing has too many 9/11 oddities to ignore, regardless of how one feels about the concept of pretty much everything with any media clout in the 90s having foreknowledge or hunches about fake 9/11 event before it was aired. Just a simple description of the resulting video should do to make one raise an eyebrow. Let's go to Clues Forum now and finish this topic. There might be more to read. I don't want to miss anything. There is more. So on Ab's website, he did about three paragraphs. There's a couple more. Before I do that, I want to mention that, first of all, unlike episodes before it, this episode did not boast about its writers and scripters. Oh, it's my phone. I'll put it on mute. Let's get back to where I was. In the opening, Howard Gordon, Jeff Lemming, Darren Morgan. So to me, that is a clue. This one stands out. Also on the subject of credits, it is the first time that the writing creating credit for Chris Carter, that's the TV show's creator, is not shown in a straight white text on black background fashion. Instead, Chris Carter's usual credit is seen at a slight angle behind the reflection of a TV screen. That's weird. As if to indicate there is some psychological layering going on that makes the episode stand out from the usual program. The story focuses around a super-powered character. His initials are DPO, Darren Peter Oswald, and he controls lightning. It is the third episode of the third season, or 3-3, a familiar signature of some kind of Masonic type. Already I was grinning at the alliteration of the name Darren Oswald, which is repeated in the show as if to hint that the character causing havoc in the show would dare an Oswald, or dare to be the scapegoat figure in a television psyop, as Oswald represented in now the utterly disproved JFK assassination. They also share a homonym with the writer Darren Morgan, hinting that the writers of the show are creators of the psyop in question, surely not having to do with JFK, who to the public is a dead man. It must be some other psyop coming. The first character, whom Darren Oswald, played by Scientologist Giovanni Ribisi, the first character who Darren kills is stalked by Darren from an arcade. He is seen wearing a shirt from the band Vandals with an anarchy symbol in it, perhaps a familiar theme for those who have seen the infamous coup CD cover. And he's behind a glass door. The glass seems to represent a way for him to hide, even though it is in plain sight. On the glass doors are two vertically oriented rectangles. That's kind of weird. The song on the victim's radio doesn't change as he tunes it from 6 to the 9 and to the 11, just sitting there. The scene cuts exactly as the red dial is about to reach the 9. The song has lyrics exactly over the sequence, which are, "Got to keep aware of what's happening," as he turns it, or tunes it. Later, when the FBI arrive at the arcade, they notice the character's signature high scores. Many of them are around 11 p.m., and for many of them, the date is September 11th, implying the episode takes place on September 13th or so. Wow. Hoy has a picture here of a video game, you know, the arcade, the big one, screen. It's a Virtua Fighter 2. And from 1 to 10, the first high score is on 9-12. Then the second highest was from 9-11. Third highest from 9-11. Fourth highest from 9-11. The fifth highest score is from 9-10. Oh, it's 9-11 right on there. They find him. So the FBI, Scully and the other guy, find Darren and they interview him. Darren, seemingly representing the anarchistic hidden vandal powers behind the glass, leans on two candy towers in the foreground and shakes them seemingly nonsensically. Well, that's weird. This is a really fun article. There's so many things going on. And the imagery is fascinating, which I can't even come close to here in this audio. I would encourage you to go to fakeologist.com, go to the article Hoy Reviews a 9/11 Laden X-Files TV Show, click on Clues Form, and read the entire article. It's really fun, actually. I'm enjoying it. I'm enjoying it too much, and I think maybe you're not as you're listening, because you can't see the images like I can. So I'll stop reading there. That's a great article. Let's look for, I see some chats back up. Let's see, test. If you come to fakeologist.com to chat, just be a little patient. Ab's trying out a few different chat types to see what's going to work the best. See what doesn't take down the website. It's kind of fun seeing what new chat thing we can try and master today. Well, since it's up, I didn't even look. KM Radio is on, like Donkey Kong. Come one, come all. Cognitive dissonance explained. I know that most men, including those at ease with problems of the greatest complexity, can seldom accept even the simplest and most obvious truth. if it be such as would oblige them to admit the falsity of conclusions which they have delighted in explaining to colleagues, which they have proudly taught to others, and which they have woven, thread by thread, into the fabric of their lives. Leo Tolstoy. Hold on, I think my sandwich is here. Thank you, Annie. Nice. I love it when my teenagers start driving. Then they can do things like go to the store and get me a sandwich. All right, back to cognitive dissonance. It's like the Septology. It's from there. Let's follow that link. Open link in new tab so I don't lose. So it's a website, www.beceptology.com. Beceptology. Just like that. Then he goes on underneath his website name. Deceptions and pranks and magic and frauds and cons and lying and cheating and fakes and hoaxes and illusions. Nice. I know exactly what deceptology means. Who is this? Kind of seems like they're... How old is deceptology? I'll have to look that up later. That's a great quote from Tolstoy. I know that most men, including those at ease with problems of the greatest complexity, that means they're smart. Smart men... We got a visitor. Hey, Errol. Let Errol agree and talk power.
Hello.
Hi, Errol. Can
How
you hear
you?
Me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Good. Excellent. Welcome to K-Ham Radio, Errol. Good. Just
Thank
reading
you.
Stuff off of Ab's website.
Okay. I just saw your chat post.
Yeah.
So I thought, okay. I'll have a listen or I'll check it out.
Well, yeah. What are you doing? What are you up to right now?
Been working a lot, so just been busy, and we just had a big snowfall today, so I've been shoveling a lot of snow, and just sort of sitting at my computer, and I was checking the chat, because it's kind of been changing a lot, and then I heard a blip. I said, oh, somebody posted something, and I saw, oh, you're on the air, so I said, oh, okay, maybe I'll... get on the air a little bit and have a chit-chat. Nothing special.
Excellent idea. That was a great idea you had.
Yeah, I'm just sort of chilling out here, literally, with all the snow. I've been listening to a lot of the shows. What's that?
Are you in Canada?
Yeah.
Canada?
Oh, yeah. Yes.
What province?
Toronto, it's Ontario.
Me. Oh, my God. You're close to Ab.
Yeah. We could be neighbors for all I know.
Yeah. You'll never find out.
You'll probably meet him before I do. I don't know. He's probably busy every day. Like
yeah,
everybody
he's
is.
Busy. Damn it, right? I think that's the deal. Keep us busy.
Keep us busy all the time. You know, we don't have time to do all this, you know, we squeeze in time to do research as much as we can because we're all, many of us are working. Some people aren't, but they're lucky. I don't know how they support themselves, but me, I have to, right now I have to work anyway, so that's all it is, you know, just a regular guy. How about you? You're a teacher, so you're busy too.
Yeah, they try and get as much free out of you as they can, which, you know, if I was a taxpayer, I'd be like, yeah, go for it.
Yeah,
help those
sure.
teachers, man. Why not?
Oh, well, we have, in Ontario, we have a teacher's pension fund, which is a big, huge fund. And if you get in as a teacher, that you're like doing really well and you'll have an excellent pension when you retire. It's a gold-plated pension. Plus, they even call retirees back to work to fill in as part-timers. And some of the younger teachers or people trying to get into teaching are upset that the old-timers who have a good pension are still milking the system by working part-time. What was that?
I just closed a file. Sorry.
Okay. And so they're saying, come on, you have a good pension. You retire. Let us get in to the flow, right? Because it's really hard to get into the teaching positions. It's everybody wants to get in. Here anyway.
Do you know some teachers personally?
I don't know. I don't have any personal friends that are teachers that I know of, but my son, obviously, I dealt with those teachers, and I don't really know any personally, but I know some. I know one that was retired, but she was called back to work all the time. So, but I know a guy who's right. trying to get in to be a teacher, and he's just about finished university, and he's having a hard time getting in because there's such a huge backlog of applications. So he's thinking of going overseas to be like teaching English in Japan or something just in the meantime.
Right.
I think that's what
Canada.
I think that's what Chris in China does. No, Jim in China. I think he's an English teacher there.
Right. So does your friend teach English? What's he teach?
No, he's the person I know is not even in there yet. Well, the one that I knew.
What is he?
The one that was still working, who's retired, or the one trying to get in?
Let's do that one. Let's do both. Let's figure out their
subjects. The one I haven't seen her in a long time, but she was. I don't know what she taught specifically, but the other guy is trying to get in, and he's having a hard time getting in. Because the other one was in for a long time and was still getting part time calls. So anyway. Go ahead. You speak now.
I was just going to say, it depends on what you teach. Like, I don't know how it is in Canada, but here in America, you get a K through 8. So kindergarten through 8th grade certificate. And you can teach any class, kindergarten through 8th grade. Okay. After that, you have to get endorsed in subject areas. So for 9th, 10th, and 11th, and 12th. So all that, we're calling that high school, 9, 10, 11, and 12. And to be endorsed, you have to, like, if to get a K through 8 certificate, you have to go like 1 or 2 years to get your certificate. But to get your high school subject certificate, it's also 1 or 2 years. So either way you go, you're going to spend another 1 or 2 years after college.
Yeah, that makes sense. The same here, I think.
Right. So in high school, you have to be certified for your area. So you have to be, I have a certification in math, so I can teach any high school math. That was another year after college. But there's also, and the rule is, at high school here, well, in Washington State, you can only teach in your subject area.
Yeah, that
you
makes
can't
sense.
Teach, it's not. Yeah.
Yeah, it's the same.
Certified.
It's almost the same here. The one teacher teaches you for the whole year from kindergarten to grade 8, and then when you start high school, you go to separate classes for each topic. So it's the same.
Right.
Pretty much the same system.
So when you say, like, it's hard to get a teacher, it's all subject specific. Like, I know English teachers, there's a lot of English teachers. So that's a okay job. But the hardest job to get is if you're endorsed in social studies. Because there's only one social studies teacher in a whole high school of maybe 1,500.
Oh, yeah, sure.
But there's 10 English teachers, right? But there's 10 English teachers.
Because there's less demand for it.
So that's why. Right. Math teachers, you know, there's about 10 math teachers in a high school of 1,500. But not many people want to get their degree in math. So it's pretty much easy to, you know, because it's a harder subject.
Oh, yeah. For sure.
So you're the guy who's getting his degree now. What is his subject area in teaching?
I have no idea. I just sort of know him not very well, but somebody told me that he was having a hard time getting. I don't really know him that
right.
well. But it didn't surprise me. I read articles in the paper where people say that the waiting list is huge to get in as a teacher in Ontario, because there are a lot of people have been going to school, going to university and college while the recession was happening, technically still is happening, and people go to school to upgrade their skills to hopefully get a better job. So there's a lot of graduates waiting to get teacher jobs, and the immigration has been increased, whereas the birth rate is down. So I wonder how many children are really in schools, because they've been closing schools over the years because of lack of children, basically. But, so we have a lot of immigrants to make up for the low birth rate. So I wonder how many teachers they actually need. That's another issue, too. So there might be just an overflow of qualified people. That's why people go overseas to teach. Because I think even you don't even need the full qualifications to qualify to be a teacher overseas as well, because it's hard to find people to do that, too, I think, as far as I know.
Well, I know I was going to get a job, and my sister was living in Qatar.
Okay.
And she wanted me to come live with her. Well, I mean, I got a family and four kids. It's like, no. But anyway, she found out that to get a job as a teacher in Qatar, they want you to have worked as a school teacher for 10 years in America. And they'll give you $70,000 a year for that.
That's not bad.
So, you know, it's all dependent on your skill level and your education. Now, if you have never taught before and you go overseas to teach English, you're probably getting $20,000 a year overseas. But maybe they pay for your airplane ticket.
Yeah. And there's any chances of raises once you've proven yourself?
Not really. That the whole position is just a $20,000 teach English to foreigners kind of thing.
Yeah.
So you get paid for your work. I mean, right? But if you got nothing else to do, maybe you could get up to 30, maybe 20 to 30.
Yeah. Well, I guess if I had nothing to do, I'd do it. If I didn't have a family and stuff, I'd do it just for the adventure. You know.
Wow.
So, you know.
My son's looking into that. He thought he could teach overseas. But it's like, dang it. If you don't have any teaching experience, you're going to get shit for wages.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's true. It's just the adventure.
But look, $70,000. Yeah, there you go. I would do it for the... I told him, do it for the adventure, not for the money.
Yeah.
Before you get young, tied too. Down and stuff.
Yeah, before you get tied down, it doesn't matter. You'll cherish those memories anyway. And you've still got some money to live on, because hopefully the cost of living is a lot lower anyway. So that money will still stretch out for the time you're there anyway. So...
Yeah, I think you're totally right. Stretch out.
So what's your topic for tonight?
I was just reading Ab's site. Well,
let me open it up.
You know, I start to like get on these ideas, and then the more I research them, they fizzle out. And I'm like, dang it, I just wasted a bunch of time on that crap.
Mm-hmm.
So I had about three things I was working on, but it's like, God, now it's all boring. So
you know what? It's funny how Ebola has been erased from the news. You notice that?
Right?
It's disappeared.
Where'd it go?
Yeah, what happened to it, you know? It was like, we're all going to die, and now nothing's happened.
We're alive. There's a mistake somewhere. Alive.
And then there was a story about faulty vaccinations. I don't know if that was just here in Canada or in the U.S. as well, saying that the flu vaccines were no good, so you have to get them again.
That is so funny.
Did you hear that one?
No. Let me Google it.
Yeah.
Faulty.
Try faulty or... I can't remember. I don't know if it was local or if it was North America wide.
Vaccinations gone bad?
Yeah, something like that, yeah. Or just...
I think vaccine failure.
Yeah, vaccine failure would be good.
I think that's what you start googling stuff, and then it brings up other words. You're like, oh, that's a better word to use.
Yeah.
We've had a pertussis vaccine failure. Let's check out the date though.
It could
how do you
be,
find the date of a web page, you know?
Well, news sites usually have a date on the article.
I'll try news.
I'll try CDC vaccine. I know every single flu places, I mean, drugstores offering free vaccinations.
Oh, shit. Don't do it, people. Don't take it. You don't know what's in it. Flu vaccine, none of these have ever been.
Yeah. I'm not 100% convinced, like 100% convinced it's bad, but I avoid them anyway.
Well, the problem is there's money behind them.
I know.
What are you going to do? They need to sell the damn things, and the government supports selling vaccines, so pharmaceutical companies make money regardless of its benefit, is what I see.
It's when they say they're trying to help you is when you have to be suspicious. We care about you. Tobacco's bad. Right. Tobacco's bad. Don't take it.
It will kill you. Well, here's an article from November 20th, 2014, when vaccines are imperfect.
Okay, where's the link?
But
I wish I could find that article because it was only a week ago. And I can't remember where I saw it, what site, or what, it could have even been a physical newspaper because I still look at those. And I know it said something about how the flu vaccine from the previous year or the earlier vaccines given this year were not as good as the newer ones developed. So you got to do it again if you really want to get protected. But it's just like the weather. It's just like the weather. Like, you know how when you watch the Weather Channel, they have all these effects and storms and they make the storm sound worse than it really is? They have those little video bites of storms and hurricanes, right? As like bumper music.
Yeah.
Bumper video. Mm-hmm. And it's tried to put this super fear of weather and it's the same with colds and the flu. Like, you don't want to get the cold. You don't want to get the flu. You know, like it's the worst thing that could happen to you. I used to get it every year for about a couple of days and then that was it, you know, came out of my system. I mean, they're just putting more and more fear into us about these things. To sell the cure, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
Like we had a big snowfall today.
No, it's a joke.
We had a big snowfall today and it's like when I was a kid this was nothing. It was no big deal. It's just this is just normal weather here. In fact, we're kind of late for the snow. So, it was a lot of snow. It was made traffic slow, but that's just normal. That's what it does. There's no need to be freak out about it, right? It's just normal.
I guess someone was saying, you know, the news freaks out about these things because it brings in more income because more people watch the news.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, well, exactly, maybe, yeah. But I think that might be part of it, but I think the bigger picture is strategy attention.
Mm-hmm.
You know, world's falling apart, man. It's breaking apart at the seams. You guys better be worried. Look at this crap.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the same thing. We're all going to die stuff.
I know. We have a lot of relatives overseas. And a couple of years ago, we had some flooding. Wasn't that big a deal. Washington State always floods. We got a ton of rivers. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they all burst every once in a while. It's the natural, you know, the natural flow of geography around here. Too much rain, the rivers flood. Just like the Nile, they release a bunch of silt into the fields, which in the past for farming was, you know, they waited for that. In the 1930s, they put in a bunch of, what do you call those?
Dams.
You know, they keep the rivers, the levees. We put in a bunch of levees to stop the flooding because, you know, farmers can flood, but we're building houses, so we can't flood houses.
But they built a reservoir there too, right, in the 50s.
There's a couple. We've got a lot of hydro here in Washington.
Oh, I was talking about Egypt.
Oh, Egypt. Well, I got hydro now too. That's why they filled that in. But anyway, my point being, floods are normal in Washington, but a couple, I think about 10 years ago, they started doing that, like everything's going to everything's blown apart at the seams. You know, world's mm-hmm. coming to an end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So overseas, when they, my husband's family, they're like, what's going on in Washington? Are you guys okay? Are you flooded out? Is everybody dead? I mean, they really, when they see the pictures coming in across the media of floods in Washington, they think it's over, it's done. We're all going to die. Mm. We're like, no, flooding wasn't even us. It's 50 miles away, like mm-hmm. in another county even.
Yeah.
But I think that's the purpose of it. Stress us all out.
Yeah. I like to sell things is basically the last, the end result is to make profits on something. Sell vaccines, sell sandbags, sell water. When, you know, there was a building not far from us that the plumbing went out. So the local store, all the water was gone because people just panicked and bought all the bottled water they could. When it probably was only out for a couple hours. But it happens, you know. I mean, we had, I think it happened a couple of years ago, about 10 years ago, I went to a grocery store and all the water was gone because a building had lost power. So people panic buy, you know, stuff like that. Oh, there it is. I see the post there.
Yeah. It's like really, you know, it's like research. The source article comes from Epidemiological Consequences of Imperfect Vaccines for Immunizing Infections.
Right.
From the
okay.
Journal of Applied, SIAM, Journal of Applied Mathematics.
That's probably where the story came from. I think I saw it in the hard copy newspaper. The one I saw. It looked like a local story, but it's probably not. It's more of a... I don't know, maybe they're trying to get more people to get more vaccinations.
Oh, okay. I see what this article's about. They're about, if a vaccine is bad, can we figure out how many people in the population are not getting immunized?
Yeah.
That's what it is. So a bunch of these mathematicians got together. Listen to this. The group of professional applied mathematicians considers a systematic analysis based on these, right? Susceptible infectious recovered model used in epidemiological studies. This model allows one to calculate the number of susceptible, infectious, and recovered individuals in a population, factoring in infection, recovery rates, as well as contact with susceptible and infectious individuals. The authors adapt this model with an added vaccine component to compare the dynamics of the three aforementioned types of imperfect vaccines.
They still
Do
have
you
the
really
word.
Think they can calculate that?
No.
Do you think?
And they don't call it faulty vaccines.
Of course you
vaccines.
Can't calculate that.
They don't call it faulty vaccines. They call it imperfect, meaning they were perfect, but now they're slightly imperfect.
Right.
You know, the wording imperfect. There, they're not faulty. They're imperfect. That whole sentence gave me
It's okay if they kill you, right?
Yeah, because you
it's
gave
okay
them
if you
permission.
Die. That's an imperfect vaccine.
Because we gave them permission.
You let it happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. Here, I think you even have to sign stuff saying, yes, you gave it to me and I wanted it.
Yeah, I've never signed anything. Trouble. I haven't had one in years.
Good for you.
That's the thing. I don't know what effect it ever had on me. So I'm not sure. I haven't researched the whole vaccine thing to be absolutely 100% convinced that it's totally bad. But I don't. I just avoid them anyway, you know. And so far I've been fine. I haven't even been really getting sick for the last couple of winters. Anytime I got sick was very mild, and it usually went away fairly quickly. And it was usually sickness from eating the wrong foods, which has nothing to do with getting a cold.
Right.
I just dress properly. I always wear a hat if it's cold, and it solves a lot of problems. Make sure your head is covered, and you'll be good.
There you go. And I think what I've been reading up on is vitamin D3, super important to keep your immune system strong.
Mm-hmm.
And it's what we get from sunlight. So that's why in the winter people get sick. because you don't get as much sunlight, so your immune system is not as strong.
And there's a condition of lack of sunlight depression. I don't know what the exact terminology for it is. People get depressed during winter because of the sun. We have less sunlight. Their moods are affected for those. So they tend to just maybe indulge in things that they shouldn't, and they get more sick, right? They might drink too much. They might eat too much of the wrong things, especially at Christmas time. We eat way too much junk. So, you know, we'll get sick just from that. Yeah. And then you don't have the nice weather to recover.
Yeah.
We won't have the nice sunny days to recover from that, that binge eating, whatever it is, Christmas time and New Year's. And so, all it is.
Last time I got sick, I spent 2 days eating junk food.
There you go.
Seriously.
When I get sick, I try to eat less. When I get sick, I tend to eat less, so let the other stuff get out of my system. I'll just drink more hot liquids or soup, and then after the end of the day, I'll be fine. Try to basically detox yourself. Detox yourself from all the junk you were eating, because that's just slowing you down from healing anyway. And
I think so.
You know.
All right, I'm going to make you believe in that vax. I'm going to try. Okay, here's my challenge. Before the end of the show, we're going to see if we can get you to think vaccines are fake. Okay, or hoax. We'll see. I'm going to give you some really good websites here. All right, there's a bunch of, what should we do first? Vaccine hoax. No more vaccines. I think that was the website I was going to. No more vaccines. There's a couple of really good books about vaccines. I have to find them.
Can you hold on 1 sec?
What they do is...
Can you hold on 1 sec?
All right. I'll wait for you. Debunking Vaccines. There's a really good name. What's the book? NoMoreVaccines.com. Growing Up Unvaccinated. Voices for Vaccines. I was brought up incredibly healthy. Avoid Immunization. The problem is when it's a really good book, it's shoved way to the back of the internet search results. Let's do book. You get a nice little Vaccine Nation. Let's see what Amazon has. Actually, I stopped buying from Amazon. I started buying from Barnes & Noble instead. They do almost everything Amazon does.
Really? You don't like Amazon?
Well, they're a giant. They're a fucking giant. And they're taking over the earth. You should see here in Washington State, they're building a new facility about 20 miles away. It's a giant block. I mean, the big city blocks like in New York. You know, Barnes & Noble isn't bad either. They compare about even. Of course, Barnes & Noble doesn't have all those old books you can buy for a dollar like Amazon does. But they still have, they're getting that system in place. If you get it about 2 more years, I think, you'll be able to buy it just as cheap on Barnes & Noble.
I don't buy that often from Amazon, but at least once a year I do.
Yeah. You're good. Let's go to vaccines. And I'm at Amazon, though, because they do have a super efficient website that I like. The Vaccine Book, Vaccine Epidemic, How Corporate Greed, Biased Science, and Coercive Government Threaten Our Human Rights. The Vaccine Epidemic. Ooh, that's a good one. Not the ones I read. I think most of these are probably, this is it. Making Informed Decisions About Vaccines. Oh, wait, maybe not. The problem with vaccines is the first vaccine a baby gets it's the one for hepatitis. However, babies have no immune systems. In order to turn the hepatitis vaccine to build antibodies, right? So the vaccine, our own immune system is supposed to use the vaccine, which is in an easy form for our body's immune system to attack, right? And then since we already have those antibodies, we should be prepared when the same vaccine comes at me again, or the same, you know what I'm saying, right?
Mm-hmm.
The same flu. So if I get the flu vaccine, whatever type it is, let's say it's the right type, it's the flu, but it's in a form that's not very strong. So my body can build. Let's see who's here.
Pingu flies.
I don't know that person.
They'd Penguin to, fly, YouTuber.
Unless they ask me to. Yeah, we'll just let that go. You know, antibodies, that's the word. So the antibodies left over from the vaccine are still there when I actually get the flu, and then the antibodies are supposed to attack that flu vaccine. It works in petri dishes, all right? But in human beings, there's so many variables, it doesn't make any sense. Like you said, right, you eat junk food. When you eat junk food, you get sick, right? We just talked about that. When you don't get enough sunshine, you get sick. So how do you know what's really making you sick?
Right. Well, for me personally, you can kind of feel when you're getting sick, or when you eat certain foods, you don't feel great after it, or the combination of different foods. You ate a bad combination, so you feel not well from that. So you kind of go by your feelings sometimes more than anything else. And the outcome, what's coming out of you, you can feel, okay, that's what happened. Because I ate this and this at the wrong time, right? So that's how I go by it. And if you're really, really, really sick, you have to go consider a specialist or some kind of medication. But so far, I've never been there.
Right. All right. Let's do something. Let's take a moment to look at our team speak. So did you hear that? The when that guy came in and out, it said user left your channel.
Mm-hmm.
You can turn off that notification so it won't say that anymore. Want me to show you?
Oh, I don't mind hearing it. It's a good warning.
Is it?
To hear if people are coming in or out. Is it recorded by your side?
Yeah.
Oh, well, except do I have to disable it?
Yeah, each person has to disable their own.
Is it okay if I leave mine on?
Sure, but if you want to turn it off, ever, okay, you would go in your TeamSpeak, you go to settings, and then to options. And then all the way down at the options list is notifications. And you have these little triangles in front of connection, channel, right, server, client. And what you want is the one that says you.
Okay, yeah.
So if you open you, then you see, and they're even bolded.
Oh,
switch channel. Just if you click those, they stop talking.
No, that's okay. I'll leave it there. They don't bother me.
Right.
Part of the machine.
It's true. It's
part of the mechanism. It gives a little character to the recording. Is it always the same
voice?
Right,
you know it's...
Yeah. I wasn't even sure.
Oh, I don't know.
I wasn't even sure if you were on Skype or not. Because I think you did your last one on Skype, right?
No, I was on TalkShoe. I'm TalkShoe. What
the heck?
TeamShoe.
You know what Chris does? Chris Kendall records... He does his show on TalkShoe. But he records it on his own computer so that when he puts up the MP3 file, it's better quality than what you heard on the live stream. Did you know that?
Oh, really?
Yeah,
that's
if you listen to Hoaxbusters live, it's through TalkShoe. But if you download his archived MP3, it's better quality because he records it on his system live. So, but it sounds better, the recording, than the original live one. Because it's going through TalkShoe, which is kind of low bit rate, and he adds music and stuff, I think, to the bumper music before he uploads the MP3. But I think
Do you know what program he uses to
record
that?
I don't know. He probably could use anything like Audacity to record it, because he has full control of the quality. He doesn't want to go beyond 3.5 hours because he says it makes the quality worse when you have to compress it to load it up, because he still loads up the file to TalkShoe for people to download it. But then if it goes to 4 or 5 hours, then it's going to be a lower bit rate to fit the file in there, and it lowers the quality. So he's trying to keep it to 3, 3.5 hours so that the quality is better. But for me, voices don't need to be that high quality. It's just for the music.
Right, you want the music nice.
You want the music clean, maybe in stereo. Like Ab, when he does his shows, they're pretty good quality. They're very good quality, actually. A TeamSpeak is good quality. It's just that it cuts you when there's silence. It just cuts these awkward cuts sometimes.
But you can change that.
Oh, yeah?
If you go to Capture, and like right now I'm on continuous transmission, so it's always open. I'm okay with that. I mean, otherwise the ends of my sentences kind of get chopped off a little bit.
Yeah. It's the one, the last couple you did sounded fine.
Okay.
But I thought maybe you did it with Skype.
No, I did it with TeamSpeak.
Okay.
But I'm set up for Skype. I have the butt recorder. Do you have butt?
I downloaded that, but I didn't get it to work. And I used TeamSpeak when I did the audio chats I did before. But I recorded the TeamSpeak on my home computer. You're recording it now, and it'll record on your hard drive without any breaks. But the TeamSpeak version has the breaks that Ab gets, I think. Not sure.
Really?
Anyway, sounds good. It sounded good.
Oh, okay. Good. Well, did you check your butt settings?
I didn't really...
The audio? Yeah.
I didn't really explore it that much.
Oh, okay.
I decided to check it later because I have Audacity... And I have a couple other recording softwares, but I'm not sure. I don't know if Audacity will record it live as you're recording on the air. I guess it would.
Yeah, it does. I got it to work. You just have to make sure your input and output are set.
Mm-hmm.
Is all.
Yeah.
And pretty. It actually did a great job. I was like, wow, why did I need butt? Audacity is perfect.
Yeah, Audacity is a good software.
Yeah,
it's really good for a free software. It's really good. It has all the basics you need for audio editing. It's good. It's free. It's been free for years. I have older versions too.
Right.
So
yeah, if you just set your speaker and your microphone, boom, perfect. For TeamSpeak, I have the repeaters.
Yeah, I'm using an external microphone instead of like a headset thing right now. And the microphone's plugged into a little mini mixer, so I can use that. It sounds better and it's easier to use.
What's your mini mixer's name?
It says Apex brand. It's a little tiny little box. It says Apex. It's a little mixer box. It's got only two channels, so I could use one for the microphone and one for inputting music. So I could hook up my iPod to channel 2 and play music through that, or another computer to play music through that. And then the channel 1 is for the voice. And that's all you need. And then you have the outputs into the computer for recording.
Well, that's pretty sweet. And for the people listening out there, it's actually not that hard. If you are interested in doing audio... Ab is super friendly and helpful I'll be friendly. I mean, just, you know, get a hold of us here at fakeology.com. We will try to help set you up. I think the more people we get online, you know, doing audios, the better.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. It's just, who's doing them now? You and Ab and Rollo. I've been doing a couple of shows and Ab hasn't done a Saturday show in quite a while.
Yeah, he's been working for a living.
Yeah. and that's about it. So we need people.
That's about it. Yeah.
We need people to contribute and stuff like that.
I loved your shows when you did them, Meryl. You had great fun shows. Just like, what's coming up next? What music, what candy music dish?
I was going to do one on John Lennon, actually, last Monday, but I was really tired because that was the anniversary of his disappearance. It's not too late, actually. I could still do one. Because there's a lot to talk about.
I love how you said disappearance.
Well, I'm just saying that in as conspiracy candy, but
yeah.
Good on you. It's a lot of questions with that one. It's a lot of questions around because it's one of those ones where you wonder, like, he was pretty young. He had just disappeared for 5 years, living as a house husband, taking care of his son. And then all of a sudden he comes back with just starting over and then he's taken out. It was so ironic. It's just like a perfect script, you know. And I would say right now I believe he's gone. Everybody believed the official story, but then I got into the other alternate theories where he was actually killed by an ex-CIA guy who was the doorman of the Dakota. They said that the man working at the door, the Dakota door, was one of the guys at the Bay of Pigs invasion.
Holy
which is
cow.
Pretty far-fetched. And that Mark David Chapman was a Manchurian candidate incapable of performing the deed. So they had the security guy do it while Mark David Chapman was just standing there, and then he took the blame. He confessed to it. But the thing is, with John Lennon, there's no video like JFK. There's no photographs. There's nothing. There's very few witnesses to actually say they saw him get shot. And we don't even know who their names are. Maybe we know a few names, but I'd have to research them. But there's just so little to go on that, you know, you basically have to default to the official story when you run out of options. But then there's all this conspiracy candy about, they said Richard Nixon was dining around the corner when it happened. And Richard Nixon had a file on him. You ever heard of that?
What? No.
Well, go to Fetzer. What? Go to Jim Fetzer's archives. He has a couple of John Lennon shows. Those are actually very interesting to listen to. Because there aren't too many John Lennon conspiracy shows, because there just isn't a lot to work with. All you have the official story. Very few photographs. I think it was 2010 and 2011 they did a John Lennon show around December. December 8th was the anniversary, last Monday.
But wow, like, you know, Fetzer's changing his tune on a lot of things these days, so
yeah.
All right.
I like his Sandy Hook shows.
Oh, they are good. He's got so much data.
Yeah.
I'm a data whore. I'm just going to throw that out.
I'm still interested
you got
in
data?
Sandy Hook.
Take it.
Yeah.
Yeah, me too. I'm still interested. Was that with Claire Coon?
No, she does the Paul McCartney ones. Those ones are hard to listen to. The way she delivers is very... She needs to work on her delivery, but I think she has an interesting case. But there's another one. Let me find it. Jim Fetzer. Real deal. I think it was 2010. December.
Assassination of John Lennon. It's with Claire. Ugh. Unless she just posted here. Hold on.
No, I don't think she hosted it, although it's possible. Let me see.
Maybe she's just posting in his chat, but not really.
She's just posting.
She didn't talk. Yeah. Where do you find the actual podcast? I'm on radiofetzer.blogspot.com.
I can't find it.
Is it here or is it like in a...
It should no. You oh, here it is. Total December 8th, 2010. Total info. What is the guy who runs his show? He's the producer. And there's a bit on John Lennon. There's only one comment too. But there was another. I think the next year, 2011. Let me check that one. I think he did another one.
Is Total Info Claire Coons or is it Fetzer?
Total Info is Fetzer's producer. That's his handle. Let me try 2012.
It
seems like every December he did one.
Fetzer.
It seems like every December he did.
It's in his contract.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's in his contract. As a PSYOP person.
Oh, there is one in 2012. Claire did one on John Lennon with Total Info. That might have been a good one, too. But the thing is, there aren't too many John Lennon assassination shows because there isn't too much to work with. Not, there's no video footage. There's no photographs like JFK, like 9/11. So it's all word of mouth and police reports and things like that. So it's a hard one to get into. And then the guy who allegedly shot him is in been jail for like every year since it happened. And there's a whole backstory on him. And he was involved with, the charity World Vision. And then he got...
Let's click on it.
Yeah. But he's got the three-name assassin deal, Mark David Chapman, John Wilkes Booth.
Right.
Lee Harvey Oswald, the same thing. So it's a fishy one. It's really fishy. But I'm a Beatles fan, so I'm like, I'm very interested in it, but still he's gone. And he might have died naturally by now anyway. Yeah. John Lennon would have been 74. So him and George would have been on, you know, they're getting pretty old. They would have been on the way out anyway by now. Sounds like a cat.
All right. So you said who worked for World Vision?
Mark David Chapman.
Kitty, what do you want, Mr. Kitty? What?
Mark David Chapman worked for World Vision.
And I'm at World Vision.
You're what?
World Vision is an international partnership. Let's read it, shall we? The mission statement of World Vision.
Mm-hmm.
You want to hear it?
Yep.
All right. World Vision is an international partnership of Christians whose mission is to follow our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ in working with the poor and oppressed to promote human transformation, seek justice, and bear witness to good news for the kingdom of God. Is this a religion? I mean, what is it? What?
It's religious.
Clearly. Yeah, duh.
It's a Christian organization.
Do they represent?
Yeah, Christianity. But they do charity work, including vaccinations. For underprivileged countries, basically, it's to, you know, to feed the poor, kind of. That's their vision. But the thing is, he was somehow hooked up with them as a volunteer in the 1970s, and he moved to Hawaii. He married an Asian woman, just like John Lennon, and he had these strange voices in his head that told him he had to do this and kill John Lennon. So it's really a
weird
story.
Is there proof of that he had voices before John Lennon died? I mean,
well,
is there like
his
a psychologist?
That's his testimony. Right. So to make him look crazy, to make him look insane, that he's a crazy killer, basically. Just like Lee Harvey Oswald was painted as the commie. And, you know, the communist that wanted to get rid of our president. This guy was painted as a crazy, deranged guy with voices in his head that told him to take out John Lennon, who was actually his childhood hero. So if you read his stories, he turns out to be a very twisted person. Just to build the narrative that he's this crazy guy who killed John Lennon, and everybody believes it. And it could be true still, but I don't know. That's the narrative they've given us. It's a pretty bizarre story. And of course, John Lennon had clues in his music, like just like Starting Over, right? Which is so ironic. That's his last hit song before he's taken out. Starting Over Again. He had a song called... He's had songs about, you know, death and things like that in the past, and people interpreted it as predicting his own death or whatever. So it's really And then there's the Paul is dead thing, right? There's all that stuff. And now people are speculating about George Harrison, because he also left kind of mysteriously, because when he died, they couldn't get a straight report where his body was. And I was following it when it happened. And they couldn't trace where George Harrison was. There was all this confusion in the media. And this kind of made me laugh. The news was reporting, Hare Krishna officials report that George Harrison has been taken away to India to have his ashes scattered in the Ganges River. Hare Krishna officials. Who are they? I don't know.
Can you get any more? I mean, there's so no information at all.
Yeah, there was no information.
I mean, first Hare Krishna.
And then a couple years later, I googled last picture of George Harrison, and there was a picture of him in black and white where he's looks rather old and looks like a legitimate final picture of him. And the official story for George is that he died in Los Angeles in a home that Paul McCartney actually owned, and that he wanted to die peacefully in L.A. because people would be thronging around his house in England, so I guess he wanted more privacy because he was a very private individual. And he died peacefully in L.A. in a mansion, and then his body was taken to a local, you know, funeral home, cremated, and then the ashes taken to India to be scattered in the Ganges River because he was basically a believer in the Hindu type religion, so he felt he should have his ashes scattered in the Ganges River. I think that's what happened.
Hindu?
He was a follower of Hare Krishna. What? Yeah, he became a follower of Hare
Krishna.
They're
Hindu, huh?
Well, I could be wrong. Actually, I could be totally wrong.
But Hare Krishna's for sure, right?
For sure, Hare Krishna. He sponsored the Beatles had a label called Apple Records, and he sponsored and helped produce a Hare Krishna album during the time of the Apple Records back in the early 70s. So he was very much involved in them. He was basically raised as a Christian, but he felt more drawn to the Eastern religions. And you can hear that in some of the Beatles' music where they use the sitar, the Indian sitar music, on a song called Norwegian Wood. And let me see. Yeah, Norwegian Wood has a sitar on it. And then he did some Indian music tracks on some of the Beatles' albums. I don't know if you ever heard those.
Mm-mm.
Oh, you never
heard those? So when you mean Harry, say that again. Make sure I'm saying the right thing. Repeat that.
Which part?
What I haven't heard.
Have you heard the Beatles songs? Have you heard the Beatles songs with the Indian music?
I mean, I couldn't tell you the title of one, but I'm sure I heard a few, like in the background. I remember that doing, 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 you know, that kind of sound.
Well, Norwegian Wood is actually a John Lennon song, but George played sitar in the background, and it's a really nice song. It perfectly blends in with it. And then there's another one where it's pure Indian musicians and he just sings on top of the track, called Within You Without You from Sergeant Pepper. But then he gave up the Indian
stuff. Oh, that's the one with all the new Beatles.
Well, yeah, if you go with that one. Yeah. Well, some people think they're all replaced.
What is that thing here?
Hold on a sec, okay? I'm going to just...
I don't know.
I'm going to see if I can get my...
I'm going to talk about Hare Krishna for a minute.
Okay, you stop. You talk. I'm going to go out for a sec. Hold on.
Okay. So what is the Hare Krishna? It is the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, colloquially known as Hare Krishna Movement, or the Hare Krishnas, is a Gaudiya Vaishnava religious organization founded in 1966 in New York by Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Its core beliefs are based on select tradition Hindu scriptures, particularly the Bhagavad Gita and the Srimad Bhagavatam. Okay, here's what's going on. My damn cat chewed my cord. That is okay. Frustrating.
I'll play a bit of that track right now. Hold on.
Okay. Do you hear that whine? My cat just chewed a damn hole in my cord for the...
Plan take two.
Can you hear that?
Yeah, I can hear it. A little, it's a little low.
1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3.
Had a girl, or should I say, she once had me. She showed me her room, isn't it good, Norwegian wood. She asked me to stay, and she told me to sit anywhere. So I looked around, and I noticed there wasn't a chair. I sat on the rug, drinking her wine, biding my time. We talked until 2, and then she said, it's time for bed. She worked in the morning and started to laugh. I told her I didn't and crawled off to sleep in the bath. And when I awoke, I was alone, this bird had flown. So I lit the fire, isn't it good, Norwegian wood.
Okay, so that was an early take of Norwegian Wood.
That was fun.
So you can hear the
and what
music. Hold on, stop that. Okay,
that's kind of fun.
Yeah, that's cool. I just found that on YouTube.
I have a question for you.
Yes.
Nice. What is Norwegian Wood? I'm not understanding this part.
Well, some people think it was a euphemism for pot. So I lit a fire. Isn't it good Norwegian Wood? Because that's what they were getting into at that time. But it's
kind of help them out there a little bit.
Yeah, it was.
Relax.
The lyrics are amazing in that song, really, and it's only 2 minutes long. It's really, it tells a whole story in that song. So that's a bit of John Lennon and George Harrison together there, the two that are no longer with us.
Oh, I know. That was fun.
Yeah, that's like an early take. I just found it on YouTube last week. I'd never heard it before, and I've heard a lot of stuff. A lot of outtakes and unreleased stuff. I have a lot anyway. I mean, there's... well, here's one. Here, I'll play in the next one. This is John Lennon practicing at home. This is called a home demo where he's trying to work out... You can hear him writing the song. It's about a minute long. Okay, you want to hear it?
Yeah.
Okay, here we go.
Thank you.
Okay, so that's John Lennon trying to write a song on tape back in the 1960s. It's actually a Beatles song. Do you know which one that is?
No, I don't.
You ever heard of the song Hey Bulldog?
No, I haven't.
Okay, well, that's him writing Hey Bulldog. He's just getting the chorus there.
That is so cool.
I feel like
you're kind of in the room with them, you know?
Exactly. That's what he used to do. He used to tape all his demos and then work on his songs. I have a really good one here. An early version of Strawberry Fields somewhere here. It's about 2 minutes long. It's a very home version of Strawberry Fields Forever. I'll play this one more. Just one more. Because it's really cool.
Okay.
Here we go. Oh, wait a minute. Hold on. Matt, hold on. I'm having a little trouble here with the player.
All right. And my cat, hold on. I got also my cord. Do you hear that humming?
Here we go.
Here we go. Change from then to the final product, huh?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's like not even the first home demo. There's a whole bunch of tapes he did on that one. But that was one of the more complete home demos he made. He really worked hard on that one. And you can tell in the final product, it's probably my favorite Beatles song. It's really a spacey, dreamlike song.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, the lyrics are really powerful.
What do you say to people who are saying the Beatles were made to basically for their music to be hypnotic and to be able to manipulate people in, at that time, the most sophisticated way? There's people who think this about the Beatles music. Have you heard that before?
Oh, yeah. And I've thought about it a lot, especially if you watch the Beatles at Shea Stadium, which was 2 years before the Strawberry Fields record was made. Before they went psychedelic, they were still in their rock and roll phase. The crowd is just screaming, like totally enraptured with the Beatles' presence, because they couldn't even hear the Beatles play. It was a huge baseball stadium. I don't know if you've seen Shea Stadium, the film footage. It's just nothing but screaming and shouting, and you can hear it in the microphones as they're trying to perform. And they performed fairly well for what they could hear, but they were just like John Lennon admitted he just lost his mind because he couldn't believe so many people had been there to watch them, and he kind of flips out on the film a bit. He starts putting his elbow on the keyboard of the organ, and they're just sweating like crazy because it's a hot August night, and wearing these thick suits. But the hysteria nice of the crowd is just unbelievable. Like, you just can't believe people would go that crazy over four guys in the middle of a baseball stadium. They can't even get close to them. There's a huge, like, the audience is limited to the seats, so the big open field is empty, and you've got this little stage in the middle of Shea Stadium where the Beatles are performing. However, there were opening acts, too. There are other groups that played before the Beatles to build up, right? Because the Beatles only played for 25 minutes tops. Every single Beatles concert was like 25 minutes long. Most of their hit songs, and that's it. They're done.
Oh, aren't people pissed?
No, because that's what it was back then.
What the hell?
No, because most concerts were variety shows back then. You had like six different acts to perform, and then the headliner was the final act, and they performed for 30 minutes with their hits.
Okay.
So you had like a 2-hour show, but you had like six acts. Yeah. Yeah,
that makes sense.
So even for the Rolling Stones, they did the same thing. It's only until the late 1960s, early 70s that acts actually played a full show, full like hour and a half set, right? But in the early days, it was just like a variety show. You played your 30-minute set, and that was it. Even if you're the Beatles, so. But just the hysteria of the crowd, the hypnotic effect of the Beatles and all the crowd was just... You should see some of the footage of Shea Stadium. It's pretty amazing.
Did they ever shut up? I mean...
No, never. Throughout the whole
show. They just kept screaming. Did the Beatles perform then?
They performed, yeah. They still performed.
They're like...
Why? The complete concert is on film. Hmm? What?
So do you think the audience could hear them above all the screaming?
No. And I know somebody who saw the Beatles in Toronto in 1966, and they said it was the same thing. They couldn't hear the Beatles. So I've met somebody who witnessed the hysteria. They actually went to see the Beatles, and she said you couldn't hear anything. They had a lot of screaming.
Were they asking? Right? I guess
they
you can't
asking
even ask
for it
quiet.
Either. Because it's the media push of the Beatles. The Beatles had the media behind them. From the very beginning, at one point they were chosen to become this big group. The media just ran behind them and pushed them to the front forefront, and then it started.
Here's a poster. Yeah.
Then they called the British Invasion. It wasn't just the Beatles and the Rolling Stones came, and the Kinks and the Who and Herman's Hermits and all these British acts came and were all big successes.
They were.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at a poster, and it's of that day. So it's a poster for the concert. It says, Sid Bernstein presents the, and then Beatles.
Yeah.
It's not the Beatles. It's the Beatles. And then it says, in person, and you got the four mop tops there, in black and white, plus All-Star Show.
Can you
Shea
play?
Stadium Tuesday. Yeah.
Can you play
Ooh,
videos?
Find something?
Play, yeah. Just play a clip of Shea Stadium from YouTube just to get the screaming. Because I can't play that online.
All right. So.
Just so you get a taste of the screen.
In 1965. Okay, let's do that. How much do you think it cost to buy a ticket to that show in 1966?
I have no idea. A couple of dollars.
If you went up close, $5.75.
That was probably expensive then.
I think so, right? If you want stadium seating, $4.50, because I think a movie was like 50 cents or something. All right, let's get a concert. Beatles, Shea Stadium. This looks like from the news. Before the concert, it's done.
You could just get a song during the concert, and then you'll hear
all the Beatles' reign is ending.
Okay, what? Did you hear what he just said?
Yeah.
The Beatles' reign is ending. Let me
just pick. You know what? You should pick the song "I'm Down."
What?
Go to YouTube, click "I'm Down," Shea Stadium Beatles. That'll be the perfect one. You'll hear all. Okay. You'll see them sweating. You'll hear all the screaming.
Mm. 1965 is good.
1965, Beatles, I'm Down, Shadum Stadium.
15 minutes.
Ad. Let that ad pass. There we go in 5, 4. Oh, it's got a while to go. Here we go.
When you know I'm down, I'll give you laugh. When you know I'm wild. Oh, when you know I'm down,
I'm really down.
Yes, I'm down.
I'm really down.
I'm upside down.
I'm really down.
Oh.
They just kept screaming the whole time.
Yeah, nonstop. Yeah. And they're far away from the crowd, so those microphones are still picking up all that sound from them. I don't know how many people were there. That's maybe 40,000 people screaming at the same time. But right. Yeah, I mean, so you're going back to your original point about how the Beatles were hypnotizing people, their audience. Yeah, you could see that for sure. In that, it's the mesmerization, the effect they had. But I mean, they were already fans when they walked in there, right? They weren't just suddenly transformed into screaming fans. They already wanted to go and scream at the Beatles. You know what I mean? Like, they were already converted. Yeah. They were already converts.
Right.
But the whole effect of the Beatlemania was such a... But again, it's sort of this thing about how they just came right after JFK to bring sort of a... to sort of capture the imagination of a mourning nation from the death of their young president, to bring these four young lads, to bring joyful sounds of pop music to lift their spirits, kind of thing. That's one theory.
What?
Too.
Right, it totally fits.
Yeah, I mean, it's within 2 months. In fact, their second album was released on the day JFK was killed, which was like their first album came out in the few months before, and then their second album was released that same day in England. And then
what day was that?
November 22nd,
1963.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's what Rollo was trying to say on his video before. He had a hard time getting it out.
But what was the whole thought again he was trying to say? So that the people listening can get the
11/22/63. It is the 51st anniversary, you were saying. Anyway. But that's a side note.
Right. He was I got you now. I remember that he was celebrating the anniversary.
Yeah. But anyway, so the Beatles came right after that and just sort of captured everyone's broken hearts because they lost their Camelot.
I thought they got here around 66.
No, they came in early 64.
Yeah. Just, when did the Beatles get here? You said 63?
No, they 64, came okay. America in couple January 64. February 64 is so only 3 months after JFK was killed. So the nation was still fresh from all that. So it's something they could grab onto and just run with, right?
Hmm.
So the timing was perfect.
You want it? Right. And do you know what started in July 1966?
Not sure.
The Hare Krishnas. That was when they first became a group.
Okay.
Officially in the United States.
Okay.
So it's kind of like...
And George was getting involved. Could have been, right? He was getting involved in it like he went to India that year in 66. He went to study the sitar and to study Indian culture.
Isn't that weird that Hare Krishna started in 66?
Yeah, that is strange.
In fucking July? In the summer? Hello? Yeah. How can that not be connected?
That's strange. I didn't know that. I know he got into it slowly, but then when he got really into it, he was changing all his music. And the Beatles didn't mind it. They liked having this kind of different kind of sound. No, I don't think the other Beatles minded him trying that experimental stuff because it was quite different. Vastly different.
When did he meet Yoko?
In 66.
With John. No.
Yep. That's right.
Wow. That's a whole new direction, huh?
Yep. Yep. And that's just when they changed their whole appearance from the mop tops to the psychedelic Beatles, when they grew mustaches and grew their hair longer, and John Lennon started wearing glasses in public, those round glasses. That was in 66 it all started, and Strawberry Fields was the song he was working on at that time. That was the very next song was going to be Strawberry Fields when they changed their appearance. And I think they showed the Strawberry Fields video on Dick Clark's American Bandstand, and there's a reaction of the young people like, oh, they look so different now. Wow, they really changed. Like, first of all, they came with long hair. Oh, wow, long hair. It was a big deal. And then all of a sudden, a couple of years later, they changed into the psychedelic Beatles. So they did a whole culture shift after a couple of years. And they just moved with the times. I mean, they weren't the only ones. There was a whole movement.
Well, so I mean, it Kate worked Ashbury for Madonna. I mean, yeah, you got to. If you're an artist, you have to change with the times, don't you?
Yeah. And then going back to the one I did of the Monkees, the Beatles switched to be psychedelic, and then the Monkees came in 66 and kind of took over.
Already? Yeah. Right? And the psychedelic.
Same time. The Monkees were more like the old Beatles, where they were like the fun-loving mop tops goofing around, whereas the new Beatles were more serious. So the Monkees kind of took over. The Beatles had abandoned their happy-go-lucky persona, and the Monkees took that over, where the Beatles moved on to be more serious musicians, just working in the studio. They stopped touring too. So
wow, that's perfect, huh?
It was perfect timing.
They filled a niche, the Monkees.
They filled a niche,
man.
Yeah, exactly. They filled, and then all the girls were screaming for the Monkees.
Right. Okay,
let me
ask you this. They did. What about Bay City Rollers?
Oh, that was in the 70s. I guess when the Beatles were gone.
They were too late, you think?
Now, here's something interesting. The Beatles released a live album in the 1970s, which was an old recording from the 60s. And on the back of the record, it says, "Were they as good as the Bay City Rollers?" It's funny you should say that. So, like, every time one group goes down, another one takes their place. What do we have now? One Direction, right? Or the Backstreet Boys? Or Backstreet Boys are already gone. They're old already. So you got One Direction taking over the Backstreet Boys, and the Backstreet Boys took over
right.
Oh, what were they called? New Kids on the Block.
Right. There's always
the big ones.
Somewhere to go.
Yeah. They always have the next one ready. Like Britney Spears is going down. Now they're going to bring another one to take her place.
It's on the block, yeah.
Yeah.
What's her name? The Beatles ended when?
1970.
I don't. 1970. I wonder when the Bay City Rollers started.
Oh, probably in the mid 70s.
Because I bet Wikipedia knows. Oh, ancient one, please tell us where the started in the popular in the 70s. 66. They started.
Is that when they started?
1966.
You're kidding me.
Well, they went from 66 to 87. Yep. Their years active. Then they came back in 1990, and then they came back again from 98 to 2000.
But they had revolving members, right? Weren't the same guys.
Yeah. I don't think so. Right. Yeah, they have 1, 2, 3, 4 different type of groupings, but they're most popular in '70s. And here's my favorite Bay City Roller song. See if you can figure out the name of it as it plays.
Okay. Saturday night. It's called Saturday night, right?
Guys. As much as I love them, to make their songs longer, they just repeat the whole damn song again.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, that's cheating. You just can't repeat the song over and over. But anyway, that's like got a couple more minutes. It's a little long. Do you remember that?
I can't believe how many songs they
sang.
Hmm? Did they have a lot of hits?
They're nameless though, because you know they really there's no personality and there's nothing that stands out about the band except their early days. Oh, let's find it. Remember in the early days they wore plaid.
Yes, I remember
so
that.
Funny.
I used to see. Well, I still look for records in the old discount shops, and I'll see a lot of Bay City Rollers in the old bins. I'll see the plaid uniforms.
So
yeah, I think somebody said the 70s was the worst fashions.
God dang, they're wearing culottes or whatever.
The high-heeled shoes for men.
Well, they got these white pants on that they're flared at the bottom, but they're above the ankle.
Yeah.
And then they're wrapped around with plaid, and then they got suspenders on and then plaid shirts. I mean, it looks like a clown outfit. They got like striped socks, blue and yellow, but they're feeling good, man, with their feathered hair. They're looking good too.
But that's their thing, and that's their trademark, you know.
So Scottish, right?
Yeah, they were Scottish.
Isn't that it? So aren't they the Englandish part of the Beatles that they gave up when they came to America? Didn't it satisfy that need for the Brit kind of thing there?
You mean as far as a new group to have another English group?
As far as, right, as taking, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, that part.
I think so, yeah. I think they were sort of the next big British group after the Beatles that were really like sensational. I'm pretty sure they were, because the Stones were already there. And other groups were just doing their own, continuing what they started in the 60s. So the Bay City Rollers, like, just brand new group from fresh in the 70s. For, you know, the young people like young groups for some reason. They want to see their generation do something. So, yeah, it was just sort of the next fad was the Bay City Rollers. Then you had Duran Duran in the 80s.
Right. But nobody remembers the Bay City Rollers. Nobody.
Well, some, they do.
None of my peers.
Nobody.
You know, if I played a song, they would go, oh, I know that song. S-A-T. We'd sung it at my freaking prom. Yeah, it was awesome. But they don't know the name.
Yeah.
They don't remember anything.
They don't have the legacy. They don't have the same legacy. No.
Tell me who doesn't remember Duran Duran. Damn it, everybody. Even if you never heard the song. If you don't, you know, you remember the name just from social, you know, from media.
Yeah. And it's just that name was kind of catchy too. Duran Duran. I remember when they came out in the 80s, they were pretty big and they were British. And U2 was not British, but they were Irish. U2 was big in the 80s. And it's so many British. Most of the biggest acts are British. Led Zeppelin. The Americans had the Crosby, Stills, and Nashes, and Joni Mitchell, Bob Dylan, the California Sound, Beach Boys. Those were the big American ones. Heavy metal.
Oh,
stuff.
Listen, they were big. All right. Do you want to hear what? I'm sorry, I'm laughing. You were saying you were so solemn there, and it was beautiful, but I just read this on Wikipedia. Oh, I'm sorry. The Bay City Rollers, also known as the Tartan Teen Sensations from Edinburgh.
Yeah. I remember them.
That's ridiculous, but they grew up and got really good hair.
Yeah. Maybe there's still a couple of original guys left.
It's a big wiki article. I don't feel like reading it, so yeah. I can't tell you. Sorry.
Actually, I have to check out now. Actually, sorry. Okay.
No, we're good. We've been here long enough. This is 1 hour 53 minutes. We're doing great.
Are you kidding me?
Thank you for joining. Yeah.
Has it been that long?
I think you came in like 20 minutes almost. Yeah.
Wow. Well, yeah, I've enjoyed
You're
it.
Not late.
I've had a great time chatting. It's been a while since I chatted with you guys. And
your music knowledge is awesome. I wish, you know, I just feel you had a better sparring partner as far as that goes.
Okay.
I wish I could believe.
Makes
bam,
me look
bam,
better.
Bam, I can't. Boy, you do. You look good.
Actually, I was thinking of doing. There was somebody I had in mind that I wanted to do. Oh, I wanted to do a show with Tom Dalpra about Sid Barrett, the guy from Pink Floyd, the original member of Pink Floyd, because he's actually met him. And I would like to do an episode with Tom and play some bits of Sid Barrett's music and talk about this character that dropped out of Pink Floyd so quickly. He had all of a sudden he became mentally disturbed, and they say he overdosed on LSD and stuff like that. And he just totally changed within a few months from a very prolific, very effective guitar player and singer to almost a vegetable of a man, and just completely dropped out of the whole scene. And that would be a fascinating discussion, and to play some bits of music here and there so you could hear how he changed. Here, listen to the first cuts from the first Pink Floyd album to hear how sharp this guy is, and then to play some of his later works where he sounds really out of it, and just to see the contrast. I had that idea. I would like to do that.
That sounds amazing. I would love to hear that. You and Tom back and forth.
Yeah,
that
or anybody who wants to join in.
Fun sparring match.
Anybody who wants to join in, I'd like to do that. So if he hears that, this is a shout out to him. Try that one.
Shout out, Tom. Get a hold of Errol C. Yeah.
So, anyway, it's been great chatting. So I gotta do some stuff, and I don't know if you're gonna continue or just close it off. So
yeah, I'm gonna close it off. But
okay.
Yeah, thank you so much for stopping by.
No problem.
You know, you got great stuff to talk about.
Yeah. Okay. Take care. Talk to you later.
Take care.
All right,
you too. Bye. This is K-Ham Radio. And he left his channel because, damn it, he's not fixing that setting, is he? Because he needs it to talk to him. It's okay. We all got our own things. And this is, I'm coming to you from fakeologist.com, where we talk about media fakery and a few other things, obviously. And we said it's December 12th, 2014. Take care.
Hi, I'm Rubelisk, and you're listening to Fakeologist Radio on fakeologist.com.